Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. In today's episode, we have what I would call a little mystery. And this is something that Tolkien does in his writings every so often. And I find that this is an interesting balance. And what I'm talking about is the difference between the times where Tolkien reveals a little bit of something, kind of like Gandalf has been doing lately, where he'll reveal a little bit, and then he'll reveal a little bit more, and then sometimes he doesn't even give you the whole story. He keeps something a mystery. For example, the origins of Ungoliant, you know, like this creature from the void sort of thing. What's actually going on there? Well, we only have so much to go on and we can speculate about it. Tom Bombadil, that's another example. What happened to the Entwives? We get these glimpses into a mystery with a limited amount of actual data to go on, and then we're just kind of left hanging, and we have to figure out what's going on by the little bits of pieces that he gives us. Or he does the complete opposite thing and will do things like completely spoil the end of a story within the story. He'll tell you how things are going to end before they end. He will go into extreme amounts of depths about the minutiae of little details and leave no mystery at all. And it's interesting, right? Like sometimes he does one and sometimes he does the other. And you would think that this would create some form of inconsistency, some level of not being able to trust the author or the person telling the story or the character that you are reading about in the moment. But instead, it seems to do the opposite. It deepens the mysteries because he reveals so much about certain other details that when he leaves things out, it makes it even more mysterious. And so in this episode today, we're talking about the dwarves and Bilbo staying where they are at Beorn's, but Beorn is gone and Gandalf goes off as well, and the mysteries that that invites, but also the descriptions and the answers we get from those characters and how satisfying those may or may not be. All right, let's get into it. So our party has fallen asleep for the night and they've gone through that spooky night and we've seen a lot of Bilbo's perspective, and that's where this kind of takes off on this section of the chapter. We're still in Bilbo's perspective. He wakes up and then we get this humorous scene reminding us that things are okay. They're safe here. One of the dwarves had fallen over him in the shadows where he lay and had rolled down with a bump from the platform onto the floor. It was Boffer, and he was grumbling about it. And so Bilbo wakes up and he has this awkward situation tumbling around with one of the dwarves, and then he says, "Get up, lazy bones, or there will be no breakfast left for you." And then Bilbo jumps up and says, "Breakfast? Where's breakfast?" "Mostly inside," answered the other dwarves, who were moving about the hall and basically joking about, like, well, hey, it's inside our bellies, we've already eaten it, that sort of thing, but you better get up if you want to get any food. And we know that that is a motivating factor for a hobbit, especially Bilbo. So Bilbo gets up, he goes to get breakfast, and then we get the first little mystery here. Where is Gandalf? Bilbo asks, and he's going to look for some food. And then the rest simply respond, "Oh, out and about somewhere." But we get told that they hadn't seen anything, any hint of where Gandalf was until the evening, when he finally shows back up and seems to have been on quite a journey. And of course, this worries Bilbo a bit and the dwarves, but they're comfortable here. This, you have to look at this through the perspective of where they've been. This is the first time that they've been able to sit down and get some rest, and on top of it, have been served as guests in somebody else's house. And many of these individuals come from high standing in their own societies. Bilbo would have been served by servants, or at least catered to because he would hire people to do a lot of the things that he didn't want to have to do, you know, for example, Sam being his gardener or something like that. And you know what? That raises an interesting question. I don't know if Sam was Bilbo's gardener. Sam was Frodo's gardener. I wonder if the old gaffer was Bilbo's gardener. I don't know when the crossover and the job changes happened there. But anyway, he comes from a place where he's used to being catered to. And some of the dwarves do as well. Now, in exile, they wouldn't have been in as much of an advantageous place, but would have been honorary guests of the dwarves in the Blue Mountains and probably would have been catered to still. And a number of them are related to the line of kings. So they would have, at least during better times in their past lives, had that, you know, experience and been comfortable with it. So all that's to say, they're not in a hurry to be going anywhere right now, especially without Gandalf. So they're just kind of enjoying the animals taking care of them and that sort of thing. So anyway, Gandalf returns and they all cry together, "Where is our host and where have you been all day?" Basically, where is Bjorn and what are you up to, Gandalf? Where are you going? And then Gandalf does this funny thing where he delays answering the questions. And I've puzzled over this a bit and I don't know exactly the reason why. And oftentimes I like to come to the show having thought through things in order to say, okay, here's my thought about this. Even if I'm not correct in the end and somebody else can enlighten me to another perspective that may be more accurate, I at least like to show up with my own explanation. You know, you are listening to the show for a reason. But this is an interesting one, and I would love some comments on this. Why does Gandalf delay answering these questions? And he does a number of different things in order to do that. Now, of course, he's been out all day on whatever adventure that he's about to reveal, and so he's hungry. So we're told that the very first thing that he does before pushing his plate away and getting ready to kind of talk to them, but then he gets his pipe out, is he eats two whole loaves with masses of butter and honey and clotted cream, and he drank at least a quart of mead. So hungry and thirsty and ready to just put his feet up and relax. And again, we always have to remember that Gandalf is in a human body. He has hunger and thirst. His body gets tired. It needs to rest. Now, it may be more resilient than the average person, but he still needs those things taken care of. And then he decides, you know what? I'm going to take out my pipe because, bless me, this is a splendid place for smoke rings. And so he spends the next while making smoke rings and turning them different shapes and colors, having them chase each other, going through the hole in the roof and flying out to the distance. They don't even dissipate like smoke normally would. They stay in the shapes of the different kinds of things he was making, and then they fly off. And we get even more descriptions about this. Green and blue, red, silvery gray, white, yellow, big ones, little ones. Little ones dodging through big ones and joining into figure eights before flying off like a flock of birds into the distance. And this raises some more questions for me. Why and how is Gandalf able to do this? We know that he likes to blow his smoke rings. It's something that he did with Bilbo. It's something that he does fairly regularly in the books. It's something that he was very known for. And the culture of this 1960s and 1970s very much connected to the idea of smoking the Hobbit leaf and blowing smoke rings as being part of the hippie movement even. But why is he able to do what he's able to do here? And there are a few theories about that. One is, well, first and foremost, he is a wizard. He is a Maiar. He may have some inherent natural magical ability over things like smoke and fire. And we've talked about that before, how he's often connected to smoke and fire. He makes fireworks. He controls these things very well. But there's another question here. He does have the Elven Ring, which is also connected to fire. So where is the boundary between his own natural magical abilities with these types of things and what the ring allows him to do? And I'm not sure that there is a complete answer to that. I think it's one of those things, at least in my studies, that remains relatively vague. It could be both. It could be more the ring. It could be that he just naturally has those abilities and inclinations, and they are empowered even more by the ring. And this could make sense because Sauron's The One Ring does something very similar. It empowers the natural qualities of the user. But we don't get an answer for this. All we get is Gandalf wasting everyone's time by blowing smoke rings. And so my only real theory here is that he was wanting to make sure to delay them long enough so that they would have to stay there one more night so that they could then speak with Bjorn again, because Gandalf knew that Bjorn had traveled far enough away that he wouldn't be back home tonight, most likely. So he was buying time. The same way that basically he bought time the previous day with the story to Bjorn, to the point where it was getting dark out and it would only make sense for them to have to stay. So by doing this, he delays answering their question, which builds anticipation not just for Bilbo and the dwarves, but for us as readers, but he is also buying time. Now, he finally gets to his explanation about what he's doing. He was following the bear tracks, and then he goes into a detailed account, or at least a somewhat detailed account, more detailed than we had during the night, of what was going on outside and the sounds that Bilbo had heard. He said that there was a regular bears meeting outside last night, and he double-checked all the tracks. He basically was playing investigator here, and by looking at all the tracks and paying attention to the sounds that he may have heard during the night, he was able to conclude that it wasn't just Bjorn outside, and it wasn't just a bear or two. It was a large number of bears. It says here, little bears, large bears, ordinary bears, and gigantic big bears, all dancing outside from dark to nearly dawn. And that they came from all of these different directions, except for from the west, from the mountains and the stream, the river that they had crossed. And then he details how there's one set of tracks that then went back to the west that he followed. And that's where he was on his adventure. But before we get into the details there, I want to ask you another question. What was going on with this group of bears meeting outside Bjorn's house? And I'm going to speculate more on that in the bonus episode this week, because I think there are a few possibilities. So for this episode, since that's not the main focus of this episode right now, I'm just going to plant that as a seed. Were these regular bears? Were they people that Bjorn was related to? Were they other skin changers? How did they know to get there to begin with? Do they have a regular meeting at a regular time during the week or the month or something like that, that they all gather together? Did Bjorn somehow call them together based on the information that he had gained from the dwarves about what was going on with the orcs? There's a lot of speculation to be had here. And I have some ideas, and I think there's probably a most likely answer. But again, I don't have all the solutions to this question. So it's a good question. So if you have theories on this, please let me know. So we find out from Gandalf that the bear tracks that lead off to the west are Bjorn's, and he travels to the Kerak, the same place that they got put down by the eagles that they'd come from. And Gandalf has made that journey, but he realizes that he can't cross the river because the river is too dangerous at that location. So he has to go miles down the river, find a safe place to cross, and then miles back down the river. And then by the time he gets back to the Kerak, too much time has passed. He could not follow it any further. It had become too late, and it would be dangerous. And one of the details I really want to hit home here is the fact that this again reveals to us that Gandalf is a real, human-bodied person. He's a Maiar inside. His spirit is that of a Maiar. But he couldn't just simply levitate himself over the river. I'm sure if he could have, he would have. Instead of walking miles and then miles again and then being too late to continue following where Bjorn went, I'm sure he wanted to know exactly what Bjorn was doing and to be completely aware of what was going on and if that was any danger to them or any of that. But yet he couldn't. He didn't have the ability to freeze the water and walk over it like a wizard in some other fantasy story. He also didn't have the physical strength to swim against the current in a dangerous part of the river to just make it across. He can't fly. He had no other means of doing that. so he had to walk around, which seems kind of odd when you come at this from the perspective of, well, a wizard can cast lots of spells in a D&D or Elder Scrolls kind of view of fantasy. But that's not the case here. Gandalf is very limited. It takes him time to do things. He has to basically play by the same rules that most everybody else does, except for a few very specific things, like smoke rings or fire. So Gandalf ends his answering their questions by basically saying that Bjorn went off to the part of the forest they were in when they were cornered by the wargs and the goblins. So that gives us some insight as to what Bjorn was doing. But then we get what I think is one of the strangest lines that we get from Bilbo in the entire story. Bilbo says, "What shall we do?" he cries. "If he leads all the wargs and goblins down here, we shall all be caught and killed." I thought you said he was not a friend of theirs. It seems weird after spending the night with Bjorn and understanding how much he enjoyed the story about them killing the great goblin and doing all sorts of other things that the goblins didn't like, that he would still assume that Bjorn might somehow be in cahoots with them. Now, I get this from a perspective of Bilbo's got a little PTSD at this point. He's kind of traumatized by what has gone on recently, being alone in the caves, having to deal with Gollum, having been captured by the goblins, attacked by wargs up in a tree. He's gone through a lot. He has been hanging on for dear life, figuratively and literally, at this point. So I get the idea that maybe he just isn't thinking very clearly, but this is a silly question. And maybe this is set up to have a silly response, because Gandalf responds like, this is a silly question. He says, "So I did, and don't be silly." He literally says, "Don't be silly. You had better go to bed. Your wits are sleepy." Which is kind of funny, and it feels kind of abrupt because the whole day has gone by, and it feels like reading through this again, I was like, wait a minute, it's already the nighttime again? But yes, it took Gandalf that long to get back. They are all hanging out, just being catered to. And Bilbo's feelings are kind of hurt. It says that he felt crushed, and he didn't know what else to do other than just go back to bed. The dwarves were singing. He was still wondering what was going on with Bjorn, and I think that's intentional. It's supposed to keep us wondering about what's actually going on there in order to get the rest of the story. And then he has this dream. It says here, "A dream of hundreds of black bears dancing slow, heavy dances round and round in the moonlight in the courtyard." And one thing we have to remember in this series, dreams, when dreams are noted to us as the reader, dreams usually have something to do with either the nature of reality in a way that the character wouldn't have otherwise been able to grasp because they weren't there to see it for themselves, or some sort of premonition, something that hasn't happened yet but might happen or seems likely to happen. And this is very common in fantasy and fairy tales and things like that. So it makes sense that Tolkien would use something similar here. And I think that this also gives us another hint as to what is actually going on with the bears dancing outside. Notice that it says, "black bears dancing slow, heavy dances." If you could choose one language to learn in the whole existence of everything, what would you choose? I would probably pick, well, something like Dwarvish or maybe one of the Elven languages, but that's not really what I'm talking about. If you could actually pick a language that is useful to learn, what would you pick? Because learning a new language opens doors. It helps your mind see things in a very different way. And that's part of why I am so glad that Rosetta Stone is still a sponsor for this show. Schools across the country should be using Rosetta Stone because it helps you learn faster, retain the information longer, it helps you with your pronunciation, and you can learn anytime, anywhere, in any schedule. Just load it up on your phone, pull it up on your computer, wherever makes the most sense for you. And on top of all of that, right now you can get 50% off a lifetime membership. That's half off of lifetime membership, 25 languages. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. Now, is this because he knew that Bjorn turned into a great large black bear, and so that was what was on his mind. So all the bears in his dream take on that appearance, or do all of Bjorn's people turn into black bears? They don't turn into other types of bears, and this is hundreds of his people at a gathering. That might be the same exact gathering that was happening the night before, or this very night. And then he wakes up, and again, here's the scraping, scuffling, snuffling, and growling like before. There's enough plausible deniability built in here that it could be Bilbo's active imagination because, like I said before, he's still kind of going through dealing with all the trauma. Or is he actually understanding what's really going on out there? So he wakes up in the morning, and they were all woken by Bjorn himself. And he shows up, and he's surprised. "So here you all are still," he says. And then he laughs. "Not eaten up by wargs or goblins or wicked bears yet, I see." This line, I think, is even more interesting because when he says that, he pokes Mr. Baggins' waistcoat, pokes him in the belly, and says, "You weren't eaten by wargs or goblins," which he would have picked up on Bilbo being very afraid of them and his reactions to the storytelling and all of that, "or wicked bears." Now, does he say this because he knows that Bilbo's kind of uneasy around him and wasn't sure if he was a good guy or not? Or does he say this because somehow he was aware of what Bilbo was dreaming last night? Or that he had heard from the other animals nearby that Bilbo was saying things like that during conversations the previous day? I think maybe the last one is most likely, but the fact that he brings it up is interesting. And then he says, "Little bunny is getting nice and fat again on bread and honey." Then he chuckles, "Come and have some more." So he's, again, poking fun at Bilbo, but in kind of a playful, nice way, like, "Hey, I'm glad you've been eating food and fattening back up." And, you know, hobbits tend to be a little bit bigger around the belly. So he's trying to come across pleasantly while still teasing them, kind of like a big brother sort of person would, like a big guy like this who pokes fun at other little people, but in a nice sort of way, not in a really mean sort of way. I'm sure we've all been there before. And the next thing we get is the narrator explaining that he was in splendidly good humor, and he set them laughing with his stories. This is a very different Bjorn than the Bjorn we met just the previous day and a half ago. And we find out that he had been over the river and right back up the mountains, exactly what Gandalf had said when Gandalf tracked him. And what he was doing is he was checking out to see how accurate their story was. And he knows, and he says this later, that he doesn't just trust anybody. He lives too close to Mirkwood, and the kind of strange folk that come around here, he doesn't just trust their stories outright. Now, he does enjoy a good story, because a good story can just be a story. But he wanted to make sure that this was true. And then we find out more. He caught a warg and a goblin wandering in the woods, and he got news for them. It says, "The goblin patrols were still hunting with wargs for the dwarves, and they were fiercely angry because of the death of the great goblin." And he also notes that they're upset because of burning the chief's nose and the death of many of the chief's servants due to Gandalf's fire and all of that. Basically, the wolves, the wargs specifically, that type of wolf, and the goblins are absolutely pissed off, and they are looking for them. And this brings Bjorn joy, because he knows that they actually did what they said in their story. Now, he also says that that was about all that he could get from them directly when he forced them, and who knows in his giant bear form what he did in order to force them to reveal that much, but that he kind of intuited that there was more going on, that there was a great raid. And remember, previously they were getting ready to raid some of the homes of the men who lived nearby, but now they were seeking out to find the dwarves or to seek vengeance on the men who lived nearby, because they figured, well, that must have been where the dwarves went, and they're probably sheltering them. So now they have even more justification to go attack the nearby people who live there. Bjorn then continues and says, "It was a good story, that of yours, but I like it still better now that I'm sure it is true. You must forgive my not taking your word. If you lived near the edge of Mirkwood, you would take the word of no one that you did not know, as well as your brother or better. And he's coming from a very lived-in experience. He was, or at least his people were, kicked out of their homeland up in the mountains and has had to live near Mirkwood during the corruption of Mirkwood and has been around a number of individuals. And I love that it implies this, that there are more people wandering the wilds, and some of them not so great, who are doing probably nefarious things for nefarious people or beings. And that's part of the nature of the land of Faerie, the Fae, is that we've talked about this multiple times. It's dangerous. And it's not just dangerous because elves can be dangerous, which we'll see even more of in just a number of episodes from now, but also because of actual terrible evil things that are about. And some of them are regular people who don't always tell the truth. But then Bjorn chuckles about the thing that is his favorite. He says, "I shall think more kindly of dwarves after this. Killed the great goblin. Killed the great goblin." He chuckles fiercely to himself. He loves this idea. And now this group of dwarves are his kin almost. They are his best new friends. He loves that they actually were able to accomplish this and finds it so humorous because he hates the goblins so very much. And then we get this kind of dark moment. "What did you do with the goblin and the warg?" Bilbo asks suddenly. And Bjorn says, "Come and see." And we find out that he beheaded the goblin, probably after torturing him in order to get this information, stuck his head outside the gate, and there's also a warg skin nailed to a tree beyond it. Killed the warg and skinned it. Now, remember, Bjorn, on his land with his animals, treats all of his animals very, very kindly. He only ever takes from them things that do them no harm. The milk from a cow, the honey from the bees. He takes the shears to the outside of a sheep in order to get wool. None of those things hurt the creatures that create those products. But here, he kills a warg and he skins it. Which makes me wonder, is all the leather or fur material on his property that he maybe even wears in order to stay warm in the winter, does it all come from wargs? Seems to me like that's a very, very likely scenario. Now, after all of this storytelling and all of that, he does them a real solid. Let's just call it a real solid. Let's use modern parlance. He does them a solid. He gives them ponies, a horse for Gandalf, food to last them weeks. And this includes a number of detailed things that Tolkien likes to detail out. Nuts, flour, sealed jars of dried fruit, red earthenware pots of honey, twice baked cakes that could keep you going for a long time and march a long way. And then we're told that even in some of this food making, he used his secrets. Honey was in them, but he had other secrets. And this is a glimpse at secret food. Food that is prepared using means that are not commonly understood. Lembas bread comes to mind for the elves, but Bjorn kind of has his own similar sort of thing going on here. So in a D&D adventure, this would be one of those moments where the party finally gets to relax, level up a little bit, refill their packs, that sort of thing. We've got that kind of moment here. But then we're back to foreshadowing. Where they are going is going to take them through the forest. And we're warned by Bjorn a number of things. "But your way through Mirkwood is dark, dangerous, and difficult. Water is not easy to find. Food is not easy to find. Don't eat anything other than, say, the nuts that grow on the trees. But even then, be careful. And more than that, there are wild things that are dark, queer, and savage. Strange creatures seem to be in Mirkwood, and you probably don't want to eat those either," seems to be what he's saying to them. And then he gives them some skins for carrying water, because water is going to be difficult to find through Mirkwood, except for what appears to be some sort of dark river. Again, foreshadowing, because they're going to have to cross that river. And also, he gives them bows and arrows. Now, we don't generally associate dwarves with bows and arrows. Typically, we think of that as more of an elven sort of thing, but dwarves aren't against using bows and arrows. I would imagine that sometimes they need them to hunt or defend themselves. And this is the first time that this is brought up, that the party has bows and arrows. They didn't come equipped with these, so they came from Bjorn. And then this section ends with a description of the stream. There is one stream there, I know, black and strong, which crosses the path, that you should neither drink of nor bathe in. For I have heard that it carries enchantment and a great drowsiness and forgetfulness. And in the dim shadows of that place, I don't think you will shoot anything, wholesome or unwholesome, without straying far from the path. That you must not do for any reason. Thanks again for tuning back in. I hope you're enjoying this section of The Hobbit. Also, I do have some other theories about what's going on with the bears, so I will be covering that in the bonus episode this week. So if you are not currently a patron, then head over there, check out the bonus episode. There's over 100 bonus episodes. There's tons of stuff that you can get into if you're looking for more content or just wanting to help me out and make sure that this show can keep going. I really do appreciate all the support. Also, welcome to our newest patrons, patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Jeff M. and North Mill, welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join us. And I have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Let's see if I can get through this list without messing anyone up. All right, here we go. AK Music Lover, Aldarian Was Right, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Cali Cat, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, oh, I messed up, Huan Is My Hero, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Bestest Boy, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so very much for your support. And to all 188 of our current paying patrons, thank you so much. And there's lots of other free people there as well. So head over there, make sure that you're plugged in. And if I have any news or a week I'm taking off, you can be aware of that, even as a free patron. And there's lots of other cool stuff you can get. So thank you for all of your continued support. And also, if you'd like to help me out in other ways, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a review. If you do that, I will read it out on a future episode of the show. Plus, you can help in other ways too. You can rate on any other platform that you're listening to this on. You can share it with your friends, your loved ones. You can listen to it in the car with your family, any of that stuff. All right, so you guys know the drill. Anyway, I'm going to go dig a little bit deeper into this bear mystery in the bonus episode. I will see some of you over there. And until next time, be safe out there and try not to hunt down, I guess, wargs and goblins in the forest unless you happen to be a giant bear. In that case, yeah, go for it. I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.